Dublin's Talking Sport with Ken Doherty and Reggie Corrigan.
Sponsored by InsureMyVan.ie. Reduce your price, not your cover.
On Sunshine 106.8.
Leary to Agar on the far side. Little dinkered, a bit of space for Tommy Bow to chase. Bow gathers! Saint William is getting him! He's not going to get the Ulsterman! Bow's in underneath the Welsh post! Holy God in heaven, what a try by Tommy Bow!
Sunshine 106.8. Hello and a very good morning to you. I'm Reggie Corrigan and welcome to Dublin's Talking Sport on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Well, we'll be starting the show as always with the papers, and Ken Doherty will be joining us from Milton Keynes to go through those. It's a huge week in racing. Cheltenham is here. We're going to have Dave Weldon from the Racing Hour podcast to give us a massive preview ahead of this year's Cheltenham Festival, which begins on Tuesday. And he'll also spoil us with plenty of lucky 15s for the festival. He did a good job last week. Two winners and a place in the lucky 15. So hopefully he can go even one step further in that. In rugby, we'll be speaking to sports journalist for the Irish Independent and the left wing, of course, Will Slattery, about this weekend's fixture in another huge Guinness 2021 Six Nations campaign. In GAA, we're going to be speaking to the Dublin County Board Vice Chairman, Ken O'Sullivan, as he discusses the planned return for GAA and how it has affected his own club, Coola, during these COVID-19 restrictions. In football, Alan Cawley of Cawley's Call, as he's going to be previewing the weekend's fixtures in the Premier League and looking back at the midweek results for both the Champions League and the Europa League. And there's a new section coming in with COVID finally coming, like it looks like, to somewhat of an end. We're going to be talking to different people from various variety sporting names and discussing the latest developments and their plans for returning to their respective professional sports during the COVID-19. This week we're going to be talking to Patrick Devine. He's the head PGA professional in Sutton Golf Course, and we just think we could get a good indication from him about how it affects Sutton, because it'll be a similar tale right across the country. So as always, you can get in touch with us on the show by texting us on 087 11 55 777 or WhatsApp us on 087 188 1068. And of course, don't forget, we're on Facebook, Dublin's Talking Sport, Twitter at Sport 1068 and Instagram, Dublin's Talking Sport 1068. So as I said, we're going to have Ken join us for the papers this morning. Morning, Ken. How are you?
Good morning, Reg. How are you?
I'm doing great, thanks. It's a beautiful morning here in Dublin, I have to tell you. It's cold,
yeah,
but it's bright and sunny, and I'm looking forward to a cracking weekend. Ireland are playing tomorrow, of course, in the rugby.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Huge match. I'm nervous. The Scots are good. We're away. It's going to be a tough one, but another couple of cracking games today. Italy and Wales. I'm working on that one. And then, of course, we have England in the big one later on this evening. They're taking on France in Le Crunch, they're calling it. So I'm looking forward to all of that.
Yeah, it should be fantastic. Everything is grand. I'm over here. I'm in Sheffield now at the moment. And I was down in London during the week. I was doing a bit of practice with Stephen Hendry, believe it or not, you know.
How is he?
And he's good. He's good. He's getting ready for the World Championship, as we all are. It starts on April the 7th. I'm playing a little bit with Jimmy White. Took 20 quid off Stephen Hendry, which is always a good start to the week, Reggie.
Did you get it off him? It's an even better start to actually get it off him.
No, he didn't. He says, I don't have any money on me. He says, I'll pay you later. It's the usual, you know, but it's in the bucket anyway, you know. So 20 quid off that Scotsman is worth 40 quid of yours, and anyway, that's
absolutely
for sure. But I'm up at Sheffield now, and
I don't hold out much hope for his world championships if you're beating him.
No. He has plenty of practice to do.
He
want to
get back to the table.
But he's been back now. He's back this season for 9 years. He's been out, you know.
Yeah.
It's quite a long time, and I'm just looking in some of the sports where Tom Brady and Stephen O'Brien, if you're interested in this, from the NFL podcast, but he's just signed a contract into his 45th year, you know, and that's incredible.
Reading those things, we're never going to get you back here. You know, you're going to be gone forever if you don't stop reading all these lads going on until they're into their...
I know.
It's quite amazing with Brady, 43 years.
Yeah.
Somebody going again.
But Hendry still has the appetite, you know. I mean, whatever has sparked, 9 year absence, quite a long time out of any sport, you know. But he still has the appetite. He's working with a new coach, and he's really sort of excited about sort of playing snooker again, you know. So he must have lost the love for it. I don't know exactly what happened. I think he sort of got a big job in China to go over there like once a month for a year, a couple of years. He's been doing that for a couple of years, I think. And then I think just he might have got a bit of the yips. I think he was talking about that when you're playing, you know, the yips where you sort of can't let go of your backhand shakes a little bit. So, yeah. But he seems to have started that now. Got a bit of hunger, and it's good to see him back. Like,
oh, that'll be great, absolutely. Mm. I mean, yeah, I follow him on social media, obviously. For the last number of years, he's been having the time of his life. That's the thing. He's been going around sampling whiskies all over the world and eating the finest of food. So,
I know, yeah. Smoking cigars and I tell you what, you better pay my bill. That's all I'm interested in.
You'll be waiting. I definitely think you'll be waiting.
Yeah.
Well, have you been watching the golf?
I was watching the golf last night. Yeah, fantastic. I mean, a little bit shame for Lowry, of course. I'm in the day of McIlroy. Mm. You know, McIlroy missed the cut. It just wasn't his week. Whatever he was doing, there's some sort of technical glitch in his drive, and I read
a bit that he was kind of saying that he's trying to chase the Chambeau and the distance and all this kind of stuff, so he's been speeding up his swing and all this, and you've seen these lads driving across lakes and all that kind of stuff. You know, it kind of makes you wonder didn't we see Porrick change his things a lot too back in the day? When they're so good and when they're at the top of their game, why do they keep tweaking it and changing it? Because it always messes it up a bit.
Yeah, well, they're always searching, aren't they? They're searching for something, you know. And so, he hasn't been playing as well as, like, I know he's the defending champion of the players, but he hasn't been playing well, Rory. So he's trying to tweak something, and it might be just a small little change. I mean, we saw in our own sport, John Higgins just changing something by addressing the cue ball a bit closer with the tip of his cue, and then all of a sudden he went 6-0 and beat O'Sullivan 10-3 in the final. So there's some little thing, and it might be some small little technical thing, but also, as you know, like in the head, if you get it right in the head, it can mean so much more to you, you know, because it gives you that inspiration, gives you that confidence.
Yeah.
And then you feel you can't, like for golfers, they feel they can't miss fairways or they can't miss putts. And that's something that nobody can tell you. You just find it, and it's all about feel. You find it yourself. Look, you know, it's amazing, like, you know, what it can do to you.
In all professional sport, I mean, even when both of us were maybe in our prime, we were always searching for edges and trying to find something that would make us that bit better. So I do understand that. But in golf, it seems to be that they're always looking for distance the whole time more.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, for the most part, every hole is only so long anyway. So, like, I wonder why they're striving for those extra 5-10 yards. But they would tell you, I suppose, that it means you can come in at a much steeper angle into the green and hold closer to the holes.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's the Shambo.
Yeah.
Last weekend when he won, I mean, even some of the professionals were waiting for him to drive just to have a look. Was he going to go over the water? You know, with the par 5.
Yeah, that was hilarious. Are you actually too far? It went down the
He's a bit like Happy Gilmore, isn't he? You know what I mean?
Oh, it is. It's funny to watch.
But it's amazing, amazing. He was 160 yards ahead of Lee Westwood in his drive. He got 45 yards to the green on the par 5. Like, it's just incredible. Like,
but then you mentioned Lee Westwood, and look at how well he played. And look at him now, and he's 9-under, sitting top of the leaderboard. So, and he certainly doesn't have that kind of power, and nor does he want it. So, I mean,
it's
a game of finesse too.
Absolutely. Well, that's the beautiful thing about it. You can have all the power in the world, but the most important thing is sometimes you can place the ball. You can hit the ball sometimes left to right, right to left. You've got to place it. And that's the way Tiger, even though Tiger had extreme power, but what he could do was shake the ball, and he'd sort of walk around the golf course. You know, he'd play according to the way the golf course would let him. And it wasn't all about just brute force. It was a lot of finesse and a lot of guile and a lot of poise. And that's the same in any sport. And Lee Westwood is a testament to that. He's playing fantastic, Lee Westwood. I must say I was very, very impressed with him. Last week he played really well, and he's following up this week. He's 9-under at the top of the leaderboard. Larry had a good start, though. Larry, 4-under.
Yeah. He had a 74 yesterday. That didn't help. But he's still 2 under. So he's the last man standing as well. So for the Irish, so we get.
It's a great little story in the Independent today. That Port Marnock has been established since 1894, Reggie.
Yeah.
They're voting on letting women actually become members there. For all the ladies out there.
I thought that was already passed. I was surprised when I saw that. I thought that was done and dusted. I'm amazed that they. Because
they're not allowed to hold any official sort of competitions like Walker Cup or Ryder Cup or anything like that until the ladies are allowed to join as members. So it's interesting to see what happens over the course of time with that as well, you know.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because in the Irish Daily Mail as well, there's a big piece has been done there by Shane McGrath covering the stress of sport stifling for girls, and a new report revealing the depth of participation issues. So, you know, you talk about a lack of participation, you talk about girls not getting involved. Well, if they can't even get into the golf club, pretty hard for them to participate. So, it seems in this day and age, rather straight. I honestly thought that was done and dusted, but okay.
Yeah, exactly. And we in snooker actually this week on International Women's Day, we've given 2 wild cards to 2 women, one from Hong Kong, On Yi, who was a 3-times world champion, and Rhianne Evans, 12-time world champion. So both ladies will be playing on the professional men's tour. They have a 2-year wild card to play on the men's tour from next season onwards, which is a fantastic for them and an inspiration. I mean, you know, long ago women weren't allowed into snooker club. Well, some of them, you know what I mean? Not now, but I mean, that'll be a huge inspiration to women playing snooker all over the world now. So the fact that if they're good enough and they get to the top of their own game, they can play on the professional men's game, and where it's more obviously a lot more lucrative than their own tour, you know, which is a really great step in the right direction, I think, you know.
Excellent, It does make sense. I mean, you know, a sport where the physical attributes, let's say, obviously you couldn't have rugby playing, men and women playing against each other, but in sports like, you know, like darts is another good example of it, where it's a skill-based game, and snooker where it's, you know, so much skill involved, it does make sense that, you know, both sexes can compete against each other. Yeah, pretty logical.
Yeah. Well, they did that in darts as well. They had that lady that and beat a couple of the men, didn't she?
Absolutely.
She got into the second, third round, I think, you know?
It was brilliant.
I see a big scandal
unfolding over there.
Huge. Richard Freeman, former expert cycling team doctor and Team Sky chief, has been found guilty of ordering banned substances, testosterone, knowing and believing it was going to help an unknown rider. He hasn't given the rider's name, but this is a huge scandal. I mean, British cycling has been had so much success over the last like 10, 15, 20 years even. You know, winners of the Tour de France, Bradley Wiggins, of course, you've had so many gold medals as well. The Olympics, Chris Froome, and now this is very disturbing.
Yeah,
very, very disturbing. So it's a huge scandal at the moment now. Richard Freeman, so he's been found guilty of he's admitted 18 of 22 charges against him.
That's unbelievable.
And it's going to resume now on the 17th of March. So it'll be interesting to see what comes out of that. Will he be forced into telling or revealing who are the riders? You know, so it'll be a huge shake up for the industry, and particularly over here, where it gets huge funding as well for the British cycling team, you know.
I mean, that's from the years from 2010 to 2017, so that's really when Team Sky was in its prime, British cycling coming to the fore. And, you know, there's been, we know Paul Kimmage has a huge campaign for years chasing down people and drugs and sport, and, you know, has been making, you know, raising questions about this so many years. And you know, it's been hidden away. But for this to come out the way it has come out, and cycling, like cycling was in such a low place anyway in terms of its reputation, for this to come out the way it has, an admission from a doctor around it, you'd wonder, how can it keep coming back from these blows?
I know. And so, as I said, it's going to be resuming on March 17th. It'll be interesting to see what comes out and what sort of revelations, and if he's going to name names, you know, because that's probably what will happen, you know.
You'd imagine he'd have to if it's a that kind of situation. like, I mean, his own career must be completely in jeopardy. I didn't read it yet, but has he lost his license or anything like that as a result of it? Or
to be honest, as I said, for a couple of years ago. So I don't think he's actually in the post anymore. He's former team chief.
In general, would it affect his license? We must read through it and check it
out. Oh, yeah, definitely affect his license. Oh, he'd be banned for a few years without a shadow of a doubt, yeah. So, yeah.
We'll follow that one with great interest, of course. Cheltenham
is
happening this week, I know.
Oh, looking forward to Cheltenham. Oh, Judy,
Before we get into it, can you believe it's a year ago? We were sitting here wondering what the hell was going on with COVID.
Yeah.
Cheltenham was on the horizon and will it go ahead or not go ahead? And no one had a clue what was coming down the line, really. We were all talking about COVID. We had no idea really what it was. It's hard to believe the year's gone.
I know, yeah. And, I mean, Cheltenham went ahead, didn't it? Luckily. Yeah. I mean, it did. In one way, it was good. But in lots of other ways, it was quite bad because, you know, the COVID sort of spread from Cheltenham and because of the amount of people there. But it's been such a horrendous year for everybody, hasn't it? I mean, you know, with sport, of course, but just in general life, you know, with the lockdown, the pandemic, and people not being able to get out and do their normal day-to-day things. But
looking at you showing us pictures of brown paper bags of your dinner
people in your room. You remember like the early days of building kids and the food being dropped outside the door, brown paper bags. You'd be peeling back, you know, you'd be peeling back the aluminium foil, you know, to see what's revealed. Oh no, it's lasagna! It's lasagna again today.
I know. I hear that. Oh. I must be well and truly sick of it now at this stage.
Oh my God! But Cheltenham, I'm so looking forward to Cheltenham. Yeah. You know, it's just such a wonderful occasion, and I must tell you, when I went there for the first time with Phil Tufnell, I was doing some work with Beth Bright. I was the Beth Bright sort of Irish captain, and he was the English captain. So it was Irish against the English horses. But, oh my God, what a time we had. And particularly with Phil Tufnell, sharing an apartment with Phil Tufnell. We get up for breakfast, we go across to the pub for our breakfast, and the pub would be packed at 9 o'clock in the morning. And all the punters would be in there, and they'd be having their full English breakfast with pints of lard. And we'd be going in for our breakfast, our bacon sandwich after the race course to do our media, whatever duties we had to do, and then wait for the race. But the atmosphere at Cheltenham, I mean, it's just absolutely fantastic.
You're making everyone listening. So
I know, yeah.
The idea of going across to the pub, having a bacon sandwich.
A bacon sandwich. In the morning I know. And then straight, I mean, the Guinness tent there in Cheltenham was like world renowned, you know, with the music playing and everybody going there. It opens at 10 o'clock in the morning. And then, of course, the racing wouldn't start till about 1. But the atmosphere, the build up of the atmosphere, the people all dressed up, men and women. And there's about, I don't know, 30, 40,000 there each day, something like that. It's quite incredible. Yeah. So looking forward to hearing what they. Well, he did really well last week. I did the lucky fifteen, and two winners in a place. It was really, really good. Zoffy was the last one let him down. I think, you know.
That's right. Yeah, but it was a bit of an outsider. I think so. We could forgive him that. There's no doubt about it. It was a good performance by Dave. So I'm looking forward to getting his picks.
I tell you what, it'd be an interesting story this week, Reg. To see how like Gordon Elliott's horses will do now that they've gone to different yards and stuff like that, and how that, because you know the horses, they're quite intricate animals in that way, and any little disturbance, it may affect them, it may not affect them, but it'd be interesting to see how those horses will be affected and how they'll perform, like, you know.
Yeah, it will indeed. Yeah, you'd imagine with it being so close to the race, they've been primed and ready to go. I think Denise is a good replacement to go in there, so I think the horses will manage, but I do know what you're saying. I'm sure there are things that we wouldn't understand that on the day a top trainer would know about a horse or see about a horse, intricacies that he might be able to pick up on that they can make adjustments to, so it'll be interesting to see what way that goes. All right, no question about it. What about the football? I see the old London Derby, Arsenal.
That should be a cracker this weekend. Yeah, that should be a cracker. And it's getting quite spicy, isn't it? I mean, United had a great win last week, didn't they, against Man City? I couldn't see that coming at all.
Oh, no way. I mean, I think they were 5 or 6 to 1, if not more, to win that game.
Yeah. I played really well. They're still, like, you know, 14 points behind, but they have a game in hand, but the league is over, you know. But the disappointing thing for United, they go out and beat City, and then they play, like, that muck against the AC Milan at home during the Europa League, conceding the last minute a header, which is very, very disappointing. But the interesting game, yeah, Tottenham and Arsenal this weekend. It should be a cracker. How do you fancy?
It's very hard. I think we'll win because it's at home and Spurs have not been the team that they were. If you asked me that at the beginning of the season, I wouldn't have been as confident because Spurs were flying an awful lot better. But they're not going well, Spurs. So I think we'll win. But geez, when you go and see us getting a 1-1 last week and the way that we did it, I mean, we're scoring goals now for the opposition on a regular basis. So, it's not making life easier for us. But I think we will get a result. I'm hopeful anyway.
There's always been some cracking matches. I mean, remember that 4-4 all those years ago?
I know.
Yeah. You know, and of course, Mourinho there, he's always spicing it up, isn't he, Mourinho? You know.
That's his job. That's what he does. That's what he does. The great one that he is. Look, I'm going to have to let you go. I could keep chatting to you all day. I have other things to get to.
I'll be listening in, and anyway.
Just a matter of interest, are you just practicing there just for the world?
We have the Gazoo final leg of the Players' Championship. So this is like our sort of race to our Players' Championship. And it started off with 32. Then the second series was down to the last 16. And now it's just the top eight. So that's on from next Monday, not this Monday coming. And that'll be on ITV Sport. So I'm down just doing the TV punditry at that. Okay. And then the following week will be the World Championship qualifiers. And hopefully Hendry will pay me 20 quid before then, you know. I won't be holding my breath, though.
All right, Ken,
I'll speak to you next week. Yeah, okay. Have a great weekend.
You
okay,
too.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Take care. All the best. That's our own Ken Doherty there, giving us all the latest on all the headlines on the sports. So that was good. Enjoyed that chat.
The comeback, COVID-19 and the return of sports on Dublin's Talking Sport from Sunshine 106.8.
Yes, indeed. And each week we're going to be talking to a variety of different sporting people as they talk to us about how they and their sports are getting ready as we see some light at the end of the tunnel to a return to sport. And this morning, I'm very, very happy to be joined on the line by Patrick Devine, who is the head PGA at the Sutton Golf Course. Good morning, Patrick. How are you today?
Morning, Reggie. How are you? Well?
I'm very well, thanks. As I look out the window at this beautiful, crisp, March morning and thinking to myself, wouldn't it be a lovely day for a game of golf? And heartbroken that we can't, but...
We'd love to be out there hitting a few balls, yeah. I wouldn't mind being working behind the counter on a Saturday. It's usually a busy day for me, so yeah, we're missing it all. So hopefully we're back soon.
It's been... I was just talking to Ken Doherty there. He was on to me from the UK. He's over there. And Ken has had a tough year in the sense that he's basically had to bunker down over in England and play a lot of the tournaments from over there and sort of, you know, stay in the one position and move around in a very small bubble. But he's still able to play and compete, which he's grateful for. I can't even begin to imagine how hard it must be for someone like yourself who needs to sort of play. You know, I know you've got a business there. I know you coach. I know you train people. But you need to play to stay in touch as well. I mean, when I go back to swing my first golf club, I don't know what I'm going to do or where I'm going to put the ball. How hard has it been?
Yeah, so, well, I suppose for me personally, you want to be playing a little bit. You want to be speaking to people. Golf is a very sociable game and you meet a lot of different people in the club, so just not having that contact with people, whether it be in the shop or playing a few holes with people, it's been difficult. But it's been difficult for everyone is missing various parts of life. But golf I suppose in the last year has been very up and down. When it's been open, it's been so busy, and it's actually had a boost in numbers who are playing it,
right?
And then which is a great thing, but then obviously we're shut down and we can't do anything for maybe Well, it's coming on 3 months now, so it's a topsy-turvy year for golf anyway, that's for sure.
And tell me, just in terms of the finances behind it all, I know every club is different and I want to talk to you about it because, you know, I think your story will resonate with so many clubs across the country, but have you been hearing of many clubs that are really struggling and are closing down, or are they managing to stay through it? Are people continuing with their memberships? Have they had to sort of suspend subscriptions? How has it worked in general?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's been different around the country from the bits that I've heard. There has been, I think in the first lockdown, there was probably 3 or 4 clubs down the country that closed because of the loss of revenue. Yeah. They probably would have had a small membership, and maybe part of their membership would have been country membership. They would have depended on a lot of people, you know, travelling down from the country and using a membership, which in the last year they wouldn't have had the opportunity to do that. So I think in Dublin has had a huge surge of members. A lot of the other professionals I speak to and other clubs we speak to, we've taken maybe 90 members in the last year on our books, which is, you know, we didn't know this was going to happen, I suppose. Like, as soon as we opened up, And whilst we were even closed the first time, we would have had emails and phone conversations, because I think people realised that other sports, the likes of contact sports, rugby, soccer, Gaelic, was going to, you know, be a little bit slower coming back. So any of the younger people who played those sports decided to try golf for a while, because at least that was their outlet to get back playing a little bit.
Yeah.
So I'd say golf in general has done quite well in some ways, but there's always going to be stories where some clubs are struggling financially and they will lose some members. So that's difficult.
And what is the, or is there a latest from the GUI? Have they given you any indication? I mean, there's a lot of kite flying going on at the moment about outdoor sport opening up, and golf and tennis, I believe, are the two ones flagged because they're deemed to be the safest. And I would have thought that they are the safest because you're outdoors and everything else. Have the GUI given you any sort of an indication on whether or not early April is a decent date to aim for?
No, we haven't heard anything. I don't think they know themselves. I think they are working on it and they are lobbying the case for golf. But I don't think it's a case of you can just put pressure on them and they're going to do it. They don't care whether it's golf or what sport it is. It's all about the numbers and the hospital numbers, I think. So we won't really know anything. We'll get lots of rumours, but we won't know anything. Maybe the 1st of April you're starting to hear some rumours as to whether it's possible. So there's hope that maybe they'll let us go back and play. The clubhouse will obviously stay closed, even the pro shop, but they might let us out in 2 or 3 balls. But again, that's only it's only rumours, and I suppose people being hopeful, really, more than anything.
Yeah, and I know lots of sporting bodies have been lobbying the government and trying to get them to open up. Has there been, I presume the GUI have laid out a clear way that they can open up safely and presented that they have?
Yeah, and I think all the organisations, Golf Ireland, the PGA, the RNA, like to a certain point we're dictated to by the government and Sport Ireland. So we'll be given the guidelines, which is passed through the Golf Ireland, then to all the golf clubs, and then it's up to us in the golf club to implement those protocols and systems to ensure it's a safe return, and it's maybe a staged return to normality, hopefully. Like, you know, a lot depends on the numbers and the vaccination, just like any other walk of life, whether it be restaurants or bars. So all I can say is golf clubs are working very hard at the moment, you know, in anticipation for opening in April, and we'll be ready to go and make sure it is runs smoothly, and we give people, I suppose, equal opportunity to start playing and mixing again safely.
Absolutely. Well, I sincerely hope that it is a decision that's made in early April. I think for everybody, they would like the idea that they can get out there and get into the fresh air. And I think it's a very safe environment, there's no doubt.
Oh, it's hugely safe, yeah. And I think what I noticed last year when we came back in May, the atmosphere within the golf club was phenomenal. Like, everyone was in great form.
Yeah.
Everyone was just delighted to get back and see their friends, because golf clubs, it's more about, you know, a lot of golf clubs, the social side, especially in Sutton, the social side of it is very big. And, you know, golf, there's a lot of older people who play golf, and they mightn't have family at home, and they might depend on their social outlets to play 9 holes once or twice a week, and they have their routine. So they're all missing that. So Well, yeah, I think it, like everything else, if we can get back, it'll give us a little bit of hope for the rest of the year as well. So hopefully sometime in April.
Yeah, I think as well, just to finish, I think golf got a bit of a bad rap as well. Golfgate didn't help. There tends to be this kind of an opinion around golf that it's somewhat elitist. But the reality is, you know, I know from relations of mine around the country and the golf clubs that they're in, that it's an every person's sport. There's no doubt about it.
It is now, yeah.
And it's not an elitist sport. It sometimes gets tagged with that. And I think that's wrong, you know. And for that reason, they're almost afraid to say, yeah, we'll open it up, because there'll be an outcry of, oh, that's only, you know, all the well-dos get it. And what about us? But I think that's incorrect now.
No, it is. Yeah, no, it's a very inclusive sport now. Like, you know, previously, 40, 50 years ago, it was definitely more elitist. But there's a lot of work done with juniors and families and kids and a lot of golf clubs around the country. And in some parts of the country, that's all they have. They have GAA maybe and a golf club, and that's the big thing down there, and it's their big social outlet. And you know, you can play it as well till you're as fit as you can. If you stay fit, you can play till you're in your 90s, which is also great. So yeah, look, it's tough for everyone. It's tough for all sports. We're probably lucky that ourselves and tennis are going to be the first to come back, hopefully. So and we hope it is April, so we're ready to go and keep everyone safe and get going again.
That's great. Well, Patrick, look, I wish you the best of luck with it. I hope it does happen very soon. And I must get out there someday for a game.
Yeah, do come out. Yeah, we look after you. Play nine and have a pint, hopefully.
Cheers. That's great, Patrick.
Talk Cheers, Reggie.
Take care. All the best.
Thanks, Emil. Bye.
Patrick Devine there, the head PGA over in Sutton Golf Club, just giving us his idea and, you know, a little bit of positivity around the return of sport and how different people are dealing with it, and how clubs and the at grassroots level, how people are getting ready to cope with everything that's happening when we get back from COVID. Now it's horse racing time. Delighted to be joined on the line by Dave Weldon of the Racing Hour podcast. Good morning, Dave. How are you?
Not too bad, Reg. Looking forward to this week and just can't wait for it to get going now.
So am I. Last week you hit the post, two winners and a place. Good going on the lucky 15.
It was all right. It was grand. A couple of them ran bad, but that's always disappointing. But two winners is good.
Yeah, no, we'll definitely take that. We're going to talk in detail about Cheltenham very shortly, but before we do, I know our listeners will want a lucky 15 for today, so I might get you to run through that first.
Yeah, very quickly, just to hopefully boost the Cheltenham coffers for next week. 3.20 at Navan, Gareth Dassault for Sneezy Foster and Mark Walsh. Won last time out in a good race, and a 9-4 to win again today. I don't think this race is as good as the last time. And he looks a progressive sort. In 3.55, Daily Tiger for Noel Mead at Navan, 11-8 in the Webster Cup. He won two starts back in a very good race, very competitive handicap, and he wasn't disgraced last time behind CDLS Emery. He should take the beating at 11-8. He's probably second favourite now. I'd expect him to be favourite off time. Then in the 4.30 at Navan, a bit of a cliff horse for me, Schoolboy Hours, 5-1 for Jake McManus, Noel Mead and Mark Walsh. It's a big competitive handicap, but this horse is well handicapped. Just skipping Cheltenham, this I think has been the target for him, and hopefully he can go in at 5-1 in the 4.30. And then it's won from Sandown in the 1.50 to Mick Preston at 6-1 for Nigel and Sam Swiston Davis. Again, a competitive handicap, but he looks unexposed and is a type to go forward. So to Mick Preston, 6-1.
Excellent stuff. So what was the 3.20 again in Navan?
Gareth Dassault.
So I have that there. Okay, excellent stuff. Now, as we said, there's so much going on in Cheltenham this week. Of course, it starts on Tuesday. What's the pick of the day? The champion hurdle is on Tuesday, isn't
it? Yeah, so Tuesday is champion hurdle, Arkle and Dufresne. Now, racing's been a bit unfortunate in the last 24 hours. You've kind of lost three leading contenders. Energamine has gone from the Arkle. He would have been second favourite behind Shishkin. So that looks like an easier task now for Shishkin. Won at a price in that race in the Arkle. Captain Guinness could go well for Henry de Bromhead, who could have a big week. Supreme starts us off with appreciated for Willie Mullins. He's about a 6-4 favourite at the moment. He's beaten all the Irish horses in his two races at Leopardstown this year. He's going to be hard to beat, and the English form doesn't look the strongest, so appreciated could get everyone off to a flyer. Favourite backers anyway at 6-4 in the Supreme. And then the champion hurdle feature on day one is an absolute cracker. You've Goshen, Aspire Tower, Song for Someone, Honeysuckle, Abracadabras, Epitant, and Silver Streak, and Charger, who are all top class performers.
Unbelievable.
It's going to be an amazing race. It's probably the best champion hurdle I can remember.
Yeah.
For depth itself, Honeysuckle looks like to go off favourite, although there's a lot of support for Goshen, who you might remember, Reg, last year fell at the last when 10 minutes clear in the triumph at Cheltenham. He was going to win easily, so it's a fascinating race. I think Honeysuckle is the best of these, and it'd take a very good horse to give her £7 with the mare's allowance. She's about 9-4 favourite at the moment. She'll be hard to beat. So that's really it for day one.
A bit of an outsider looking at Willie Mullins. He's got Sarja in that as well.
Yeah, Sarja would have a chance. He finished second in the race last year, but I just don't think he's good enough. Now, the ground's going to be good, which is what he supposedly needs, but he's won some big races on soft as well. As far as Howard have a chance as well, he looks good this year. And Abacadabra's for Sneezy Foster. He's finished second in Supreme last year and fourth in Champion Bumper the year before. And he just hasn't had things go right from this year, so I wouldn't be surprised if he ran a big race at a big price as well.
Excellent stuff. Okay. On to Wednesday, are we?
On to Wednesday, yeah. Champion Chase thing. Yeah, Ballymore is a belt of a race, to be honest. There's three horses who are all vying for favouritism. Bob Ollinger for Henry de Bromhead, Gallard Dumesnil for William Mullins, and Brave Man's Game is the Great British Hope for Paul Nichols. The three of them could be anything. They're all three very good horses, but the rapport that Bob Ollinger is held in by not only by Henry de Bromhead but by everyone around Irish racing, he won his point to point extremely well. He is certain to go off favourite, I would say, at this stage, because he's been backed, like, defeat is out of question. He's a 9-4 chance for Rob Corr. Then you have the Brown Advisory, which is formerly known as the RSA. Monkfish is a short price there. He's 1-2 or so for William Mullins. He will win, and he'll be a sight to see around Cheltenham. He's a super jumper. And then the Champion Chase, it could be a good day for William Mullins. If Shaqan Pourceau there, he's about an even money shot at the moment. I can't see him beating, to be honest. The question is, will he act around Cheltenham? He's never done it before, but I see no fears there for me, and I'll be struggling to take him on, to be honest.
Will Altior in the race?
Yeah, Altior, he looks like he needs about 3 miles now, and I was saying to Dean on the podcast during the week, if Altior was 12-1, I might back him each way, but he's not. He's second favourite at 6-1, and there's no value in that price for me. He could go and win. He loves Cheltenham. He's won 4 times around there. He's a twice Champion Chase winner. There's nothing to say he can't, but it's just a price thing with him for me. He jumps big and slow now, and he looks like he needs 3 miles. Rouge Vif is an interesting horse for Harry Whittington. He's a 25-1 chance. If the ground is good, he will love it, and he will outrun them all to 25-1.
And even, you know, it's strange to see another Henry de Bromhead horse, but well outsider, 33-1, you're getting a price on that for Notebook.
Yeah, he's been disappointing this year. He was good early last year, and he won his first race this year, I think, but since then he hasn't really run any of his races. Now, not to say he couldn't on the day, Henry has done it with worse horses than Notebook, and kept form on the day. He could have a chance, if you want to be betting without Shaqan Pourceau on the day, and you might get 3 places on that as well. So that's the view I'd be taking if you want to have a punt on a bigger one.
Okay.
Maybe back to each way without Shaqan Pourceau.
Okay. So Thursday has the Ryanair Chase, the Stayers Hurdle, the Paddy Power Plate. Amazing horses throughout all of that.
Yeah, Thursday's going to be a great day. Envoy Allen starts it off in the Marsh. He's odds on. He should win. He's moved to Henry de Bromhead's now, and there was some talk during the week that he wasn't really settling in well, but from what I've heard is that he's the ultimate professional. He's a bit quirky, not so much buzzy or awkward or anything like that, just he's his own man. He kind of knows that who he is, and he's king of the castle and stuff like that, so he's just shutting stuff around down in Henry de Bromhead's now at the moment. But he's 8-11 or so. He'd probably go off shorter, and he will win. At a bigger price in that race, Fuse Raffles, I think, has a great chance. He's a 20-1 chance. So I'll be backing him each way for Nicky Henderson. He's probably the best of the British in that race.
Okay.
Then the Ryanair is wide open. You have Alaho, Mellon, Min, Sam Crow, Mr. Fisher, Imperial Aura, all grade one winners. And it's very hard to pick a winner in that race, especially with 3 William Mullins horses at the top of the market. Potentially Mr. Fisher. Nicky Henderson won a good course and distance form race earlier on in the year, and since they for this, he might have a chance, but it's not really a race get stuck into for me. Yeah. And then the Stayers, I was mad keen on Time Hill, but he was withdrawn yesterday. Unfortunately, he had a muscle injury, so he's looking like going to Aintree. So Florin Poir maybe for Gavin Cromwell at around a double-figure price. He might have an each-way chance. He won the Grade 1 at Christmas, and it's been saved for distance. He's a progressive horse, and it'd be nice to see Gavin Cromwell open another Cheltenham winner.
Stuff. Okay, that brings us up to Friday, of course.
Friday, yeah. So Gold Cup Day, the big blue ribbon day. Vanna here should get everyone off to win and start in the Triumph. The first race, he won his two prep races, and then at Christmas he was put to one side for this. He might even go off favourite. Tritonic won it at Donis a couple of weeks ago at Kempton, and for Alan King, who's won the race four times before, he might go off favourite. But Vanna here, I think, is a different league to these, and he should win. Then you've the Albert Bartlett, another Grade 1. It's wide open, this. You could take a punt on a big price. You've seen horses win this at 50-1, 40-1 in the past. It's not really a race you're stuck into. But Fakira, again, for Sneezy Foster, ran a good prep race for this in the Dublin Racing Festival, and I think he could go one better here. Then the Gold Cup, it's an amazing Gold Cup, really. You've Abel Photo looking to go for three in a row. And eliminate some big previous doers of that. Then you've Champ, who ran over 2 miles the last day. Santini, who was second in the race last year, lost in translation. Frodon, who won the King George. And Absolute Heart, who was my fancy in the race, who won the Sabbath at Christmas there at Leopardstown. He's just a young horse who could improve for the step up and trip, and hopefully can finish off the week in good style.
Absolutely, yeah. No, there's not so like when you're just going through them like that, and you're hearing all the names popping out. It's just incredible, isn't it? It really is an incredible.
Yeah,
festival.
It's brilliant, and I think this year it's probably less social runners, but I think and Giggenstown have kind of taken out a few of their handicap horses, but all the big names are there. We've been lucky enough now. The last 24 hours have been bad for injuries and stuff, but usually you have a few more horses who don't make the Cheltenham Festival, but this year they all seem to have made it. And it looks like it's going to be a cracking week of racing. And the ground is currently good, soft in places, and it's dry forecast from now, so it's going to be perfect racing ground as well. So no excuses for anybody.
We know there's been different things going on here in terms of trainers, obviously with Gordon Elliott and all the rest of it. But I mean, it is a big English Irish Derby every year, Cheltenham. I mean, that's what it's all about. And who's kind of Willie Mullins? Obviously, is probably the standout trainer with the horses in form at the moment. Where do you see those kind of big trainer battles coming in?
Well, to be honest, I think William Mullins is probably miles ahead of everyone else. I think he's about 1-3 in the top trainer market. And Paul Townend is similar price in the top jockey market, so that kind of tells the story. I know people who have backed Ireland to win 20 races or more this year out of 28 races, which seems incredible, really, given that, like, I remember a couple of years, 10 years ago, that Ireland would only have 2 or 3 winners, yeah. And it'd be celebrated. Now they're talking about having 20-plus winners, so... the English Challenge this year, for whatever reason, maybe it's COVID related, maybe it's because the point-to-point sales haven't been going through. They don't seem to have the horses that they previously had. Like I think very few favourites, maybe 2 or 3, and very few in the Grade Ones. So it's all Irish horses. So the balance is very much in our favour at the moment, which is a great thing, and it won't last forever. So we need to enjoy it.
Yeah, and with regard to the Gordon Elliott stable and Denise Foster taking over, I know she's already bagged a first winner with Defe Blue when she took over, didn't she, from Gordon Elliott?
Yeah.
So how is it all looking? What's the word on the ground? I mean, how has that kind of transition fared out?
I think the transition for the horses that have stayed in Cullintra is going to be fine. Like, they would have been so close to the festival, they wouldn't have taken over anyway. They would have done all their major pieces of work and being ready and fit to go. It's more a question of the horses that have been moved from Gordon's or Sneezy's from Cullintra to the likes of Henry de Bromhead and Willie Mullins, because though Ballyadam runs in Supreme, he's never travelled over to Cheltenham. He's never travelled over to England full stop. So he's a young horse who could be a bit more fractious and get a bit more spooked. But Ruby does a good piece on it on Racing TV. So basically Willie Mullins sends horses to Australia for the Melbourne Cup, and they have to send them to Newmarket first for quarantine 2 weeks, and then they have to go to quarantine in Australia for 2 weeks. So they're basically moving for 3 different stables for a period of 6 weeks.
Right.
And then they're expected to run in one of the richest flat handicaps in the world.
Yeah, it's very disturbing for a lot of the horses.
Exactly. And, yeah, and they manage it. So I think because it's only 2 weeks, they'll get away with it.
Yeah.
We'll say it was, if it was 6 weeks or 2 months or something like that, it might be a bit more harder because you'd have to actually change your routine. They're probably just doing the same that they had been doing with Gordon. And
you might get better prices on the Elliott horses because...
They might drift because people think are taking an opinion that they're not going to run to perform. So it's hard now, and it's going to be an interesting watch to see what happens.
Yeah, we'll indeed. We'll watch the market carefully. It might be a clever better might say I'll take a chance on them still because...
You should do a section next week,
now, yeah? Dave. All right. Listen, as always, I hope you have as good a hit rate this week as you did last week, and we'll chat to you again. Enjoy Cheltenham. Enjoy every bit of it, because I will.
Thanks, Dave. All the best.
Okay, take care, Dave. Well done there, giving us all of the thoughts on Cheltenham. Loads in that. We'll try and get some of that up on our social media. But for today, the Lucky 15 is across the board. So he's going to Navan mostly. So in the 320, it's Garda. So 355 is Daily Tiger, and the 4:30 is School by Boy Errors, and then we have in the 150 in Santan, I think it is, I'll have to check that, it's Meek the President. So that's the Lucky 15. We will get that up on all of our social media channels for you to have a look at. It's time to turn our attention to rugby in what is a huge weekend. I'm delighted to be joined by Will Slattery of the Irish Independent and Left Wing Podcast. Morning, Will, how are you?
Good, thanks, Reggie, how are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Doing well. We'll get to the internationals in a minute. Just a quick mention before I do go to that about last night and some good results. Leinster carving their way through pretty mediocre Zebre team, although Zebre did get their way back into it a little bit in the end. The scoreline maybe flattered them a little bit. But there was some good young talent coming through, as to be, more importantly. I was particularly impressed with the young hooker, Dan Sheehan. So, again, the Leinster conveyor belt continues.
Yeah, and Dan Sheehan is definitely, I suppose, the one player last night that everyone was interested to see. Hooker, at the moment, is a position in Irish rugby, but we don't have a huge amount of established talent. Rob Herring obviously got the nod this week. I know a lot of people are probably, you know, not overly enthusiastic about that. He's a good, solid player, but if you're looking for a dynamic ball carrier, a guy with size, a guy with pace, Dan Sheehan seems to fit the bill now. The caveat being he's only started two games for Leinster, both against Libra. Now I know he scored two tries, I think, on both of them. And I think he's picked up two more tries off the bench in a couple of other matches, including against Ulster last weekend. But he's a huge prospect. Personally, I would love to see him get a chance. You know, there's two European games potentially for Leinster. There's a final against Munster. There'll need to be some rotation in and around there. Like, you have Sean Cronin and James Tracy, guys who are veteran, experienced heads. But yeah, I think now the time is to have a 1-2 punch of a Kelleher and a Dan Sheehan. And I think that could really be good for Irish rugby in the short term. If these guys start getting big minutes and big games at club level, they become a really viable option for Andy Farrell then, I think.
Absolutely. Well, let's hope, I know they're very young, but let's hope that there's a bit of faith put in them sooner rather than later. Another young player who was, you know, steady last night, good game, solid performance was, of course, the out half, Harry Byrne, that all the chat has been about. And again, a position that we need people coming through in, and we'll talk about Joey Carberry in a minute. But it was a good game last night for Harry Byrne too.
Yeah, no, it's a funny one. I was chatting to my friend. I was just watching it with my housemate, and we were just kind of chatting about it. I was saying that, like, Leinster, you have that kind of win all the time, and Ross Byrne has you know, played in a lot of those games. But I still think that Harry Byrne, even last night, I just thought he offered a little bit more. He looked a little bit lively. His passing, I thought some of his passing was really good, really on the gain line. I just think as a ball player, he does offer that little bit more. And like, kind of like Dan Sheehan in these games where there might be rotation, like, and there might be, you know, I'd love to see Harry Byrne, say, for instance, start against Toulon in that last 16 time. Maybe go with your first choice, Johnny Sexton, for the final. And then maybe give Harry Byrne a shot against Toulon, against a proper French outfit, a big game. Because I think he's another guy who, if he gets a couple of big club games under his belt, again, becomes a live option to play for Ireland. And I know it's just Zebre, so, you know, you don't want to get too carried away. But you have to take a little nuggets. There's little things that you kind of see during the game. You're like, that impresses me. I think there's a few with Sheehan and with Harry Byrne there.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd agree with you there as well. And then, of course, the great hope that is Joey Carberry made a proper return last night. And he was definitely a difference for Munster and controlled things well there too. So good to see him back.
Yeah, like that lovely break of the Shane Daly try, I think, brought everybody back to Carberry before his injury misery of the last couple of years. And he even had some lovely touch finders as well to show that side of his game. It's funny, I've been talking about this kind of club block a lot, but Johan McGrath now has a huge decision to make it out of half, because David Hanrahan, a guy he's gone with a number of times, who hasn't really delivered in those games against Leinster. He is Ben Healy, a young up-and-coming at half. But for me, Carberry's already shown enough to say that he's the man who should get that 10 jersey. I know he's only played, I think this was his first start, he played last week. If they start him again next week to get some more minutes into his legs, they might even want to keep him back and save him for that final. But yeah, great news for Irish rugby again. Even just to see him, like, that little bit of spark, that's still there, that hasn't quite been dulled by the injury. Mm. And he'll only get better with the games under his belt. So even though it was two easy wins for Munster and Leinster last night, I left being reasonably positive with a couple of players that we mentioned there, that over that club block where there's a lot of ticking fast, that a big exposed. Might come into the international picture.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, the international picture is obviously where we have most focus tomorrow. Huge game for Ireland. I mean, the Italian match was a bit of a foregone conclusion. We knew we were never going to lose that game. But this is the real test for Andy Farrell. Scotland, who are the form team, you could argue at the moment, at home against Ireland. Pressure's really on.
Yeah. Yeah, for Johnny Sexton were pretty bullish seemingly in the post-match press conference. And they felt that the line of questioning that Italy were very, very poor did a disservice to the Irish performance. So they have a chance on Sunday to really put that right, in the sense that Scotland is a big test. The only two teams they played in the Six Nations thus far that you'd race, they beat, or the Germans. Like, so this is a massive test for them. Likewise for Scotland, it's a very big game for them. Like, they blew their chance to back up that England win. I know they're down to 14 like Ireland, but it was only 25 minutes and they had a 9-point lead. So, no, it's really interestingly poised. We'll know so much more about where Ireland are at in the direction. Like, the talk coming out of the camp has been, like, incessantly, like, we are, like, Johnny Sexton himself said, like, I've never been more confident than I am right now with the direction the team is going. Well, I won't know that if they go out and they beat Scotland at the weekend, because although Scotland are, you know, improving in some ways, like, for Ireland, this is a team Ireland should be beating, man. It's probably, you know, as heard me say that, they probably beat one of these days.
Well, Will, the quality of your line is pretty poor at the moment. So what we're going to do is we're going to actually call Will back in just a moment to try and get a better quality of line on that, because it's quite difficult to hear some of the things that he's saying. But the points that were being made and the main talking points around this Irish team, of course, have been the selection of Jemison Gibson-Park at 9 over Murray. I mean, there was a lot of people who would feel that Conor Murray would be the player that they would like to see in that position, but I think Jemison Gibson-Park is being picked on form, and also, as Will mentioned there, Rob Herring is the other player who is, you know, some feel a little bit fortunate maybe to get the nod there over Kelleher as this game unfolds. And I think it's going to be a real, it's going to be one of those matches as we look to the game tomorrow for Ireland, where this is a Scotland team that are in unbelievably good form at the moment. They were disappointed, I think, that they're not kind of on an unbeaten beaten train at this stage, that they lost that game. They'd feel that they lost that game simply because of the card decision that went against them. And I think a lot of people would probably defend them on that thought and think that that might be the case, because certainly it was a tough one for them in that match where they managed to get the their player sent off. So I think the Scottish fellas will be definitely thinking that they're going to come back and they're going to, They've got a, you know, they've got a reason to come back and prove what how good of a team that they are, and the fact that that game was sort of whipped away from them. And they are a team who are certainly in superb form at the moment. So I don't think there's any question whatsoever that Scotland will be a tough challenge for Ireland. And also, as you look around, you know, looking at the combination of putting Ian Henderson and James Ryan in there together in that second row combination, that's a pretty difficult decision to make when when you're looking at Tadhg Byrne, whose form has been so good of late as well, and they've decided to move him to the sixth position. So whether or not that's going to be ongoing, and the way that they decide to keep going with that is going to be a difficult one as well, because there are so many good options in that back row position for Leinster that they could resort to if that was the case. No question either that there's going to be a huge amount of pressure on Andy Farrell to try and get a result. I mean, there's people now asking the question about why the performances from Ireland haven't been better to look at, why there hasn't been more flair, why we haven't seen more inventiveness around the Irish team and the type of game that they're playing. But I know that's a question that many people will have, and I think we will need to see evidence of that in this game against Scotland tomorrow. I think we have Will back now on the line. Will, you're back with me. Hopefully a better line.
Yeah, sorry, Reggie. I walked into a tunnel by mistake, I think.
That's no problem. No, I'm just making the point that for Andy Farrell, the pressure is really on. And I think, above all else, I think we saw glimpses of it against Italy, but we realised that was against a different type of opposition. We want to see a different style of game plan. It's been cried out like by so many people for that to be the case, and I think that's what the Irish fans want to see.
Yeah, sorry, I'm not sure. Any kind of notion that the opposition maybe played a part. The two teams that Ireland have played in the Six Nations that you'd rate, they lost. So this is a massive game for them to see where they're at in this development. Like Johnny Sexton was saying during the week, he's never been confident that the development of the team is going. So I'm not too sure. Sorry, hello?
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm losing you there again, Will. We'll have to leave it there, I'm afraid. Unfortunately, the line quality of line is just too bad, so we'll have to let Will go. We'll have to go back to him again on another day to try and get his opinion on that, which is disappointing. I would have liked to have been able to talk to him on that, but such are the joys of live radio and of the reception that we're getting these days. But the point is well made that Farrell is under pressure. There's no question about it. He's got to get a result in this game and finish out this campaign as best they can, because he and the rest of the coaching staff are under pressure for that. But you know, Gregor Townsend, he knows, as I said, that's a team, his team are a team that started out this campaign with huge ambition, and they feel probably had it snatched away from them, that opportunity to go and continue on their winning ways, and they'll feel that was taken away from them. So Scotland at home is going to be a very, very tough prospect for Ireland to come up against. So it's going to be really, really interesting to see what way that unfolds. And of course, Wales getting that victory and putting themselves in the position that they're in, they're away to Italy, and you'd have to feel that that's a game that is definitely going to go their way. It's hard to see how it wouldn't, which means that that sets them up for an unbelievable championship decider later on at the end of the campaign. So it's going to be a really interesting game, and against Italy, because potentially there is a banana skin there with Italy, because they're wounded as well. But of course, the real game of the weekend, the one everybody's really looking forward to, is the one they're calling Le Crunch. That's England against France, of course, later on this afternoon in Twickenham at 4:45. I think England have been hugely disappointing so far in this competition. There's no doubt about it. They have a vast array of highly talented players, and Eddie Jones has been coming into quite a lot of criticism throughout the English media and across rugby circles, in the sense that they feel that he's perhaps not picking some of the form players, and he's sticking with type on the players that he has been picking. And I think there's some substance to that. I think people are right to ask those questions. But again, you're looking at a coach who's under pressure. It's not likely they're going to make any changes now at this stage. It's a little bit late in the day for them to be looking at making any changes. So in terms of coaching staff, as we go into a World Cup cycle, it's not likely to happen. But I think England are under huge pressure at home to get a result. And of course, France have had their own headaches as well with the COVID outbreak within the camp and the pressure that's been coming on them. But they are the form team. They're the team that's been so exciting to watch, and they're ones that everybody who loves their rugby has really been enjoying watching of late. So I think, you know, England, they're up against the wall, and it's always a very, very difficult thing to go and play against an English side who have their backs to the wall in that sense, and who are going to have to try and almost, they're almost playing for pride now at this stage, you know, to try and prove that they have let themselves down so far in the competition, and that they have a lot more to offer. So I think as we look at it, you're going to see an English side that certainly wants to prove that point. But, you know, when you're looking at France and you're looking at players like the likes of Dupont and Jalibert, who are the youth of France today, and the ones that really people feel are the future of the game, there's real excitement around it. You know, Ficou in the centre, Vakatawa on the wing, they're all highly dangerous attacking players, and there's questions over the likes of Billy Vunipola, Mako Vunipola, whether or not their fitness is up to the level. And even with Ford at 10 and Youngs, that combination, and Farrell in the centre, just doesn't seem to be quite clicking at the moment for England. And you'd feel that if France can get a foothold in that game early doors and put themselves into a position where they feel that they're putting pressure on England, it's going to be very interesting to see how that English side react to that and in what way that they'll be able to come back from it. So certainly of the weekend, I think that one is going to be the juiciest this afternoon, and that one is at 4:45 today in Twickenham, and really looking forward to that. So we're going to leave it at that. That's the rugby for this week. Now we're going to turn our attention to GAA. I'm delighted to be joined on the line now by Ken O'Sullivan, who's the Vice Chair of the Dublin County Board. Good morning, Ken. How are you?
I'm good, Reggie, and thanks for having me on. And good morning to all your listeners out there, and all the Dub fans in particular.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, delighted to have you on, no doubt about it.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're just trying to get a feel for how everything is working at the moment. I had, you know, I was speaking earlier on the show to Patrick Devine of Sutton Golf Club, and yeah, hearing how they're managing throughout all of this COVID stuff and everything else. And, you know, there's a light at the end of the tunnel that maybe in April outdoor sport will be resuming in some shape or form. Have you guys heard anything yet about GAA? Was there any chance the kids might be allowed back out?
Well, we live in hope and expectation also. We are very much waiting on the green light from national government and the GAA. We're ready to resume games as soon as we are given appropriate notice. And I would expect that we will have a return to games for juveniles in particular, the first, followed by the adults later on. I'd also compliment and comment on the work and the activity that's taking place in every club across the country, not just in Dublin, but every club. You know, Zoom calls, Zoom meetings, online training sessions, absolutely fantastic. So our players are out there, our players are ready to go. We all want to get back onto the green fields of Ireland. No question about that.
No question whatsoever about that. I think it's the kind of bit of hope that's keeping everybody going, especially through the winter months. You know, it's so hard in the dark, dreary evenings not to be able to get out and about. But that bit of light at the end of the tunnel. And I know that there's been lots of, with the Gaelic Players Association, I know you're involved in the CCC as well. There's been scenarios presented to memberships, you know, three different ways about how 21, about how the season might roll out. What are they?
Well, first of all, we're expecting that we're going to go inter-county first. Okay, so we will have an inter-county championship at senior level, Lee McCarthy and Sam McGuire, and that will run through until, initially it was late July, now it's forecast to go into August. Okay, and that will clear the decks for club championships nationwide. From a juvenile perspective, it would be different. We would have a return to juvenile games from CCC 1 and CCC 2 earlier on in the year. I think at this stage, in terms of our league program within Dublin for adult games, hurling and football, we will have a different scenario. We won't be in a position to fulfill a full quota of a division of 16 teams in league football. But what we will look to do here is to reduce, run a curtailed league system, which effectively would be to give clubs and players matches in advance of the championship season.
Okay, well, that sounds like it's all planned out. And has it been receiving a good audience? You know, have the government been listening to this, let's say?
Well, I expect that they have. And in fairness, the GAA, our previous president, John Horton, had done a very, very good job in terms of representing our needs and the needs of our players and our members as a government. I think we have very, very strong support. And again, I would come back to this time last year. If you look when the pandemic actually first struck the country, the first association that the government turned to for national assistance was the GAA. And, you know, great credit to our members in every club who distinguished themselves in terms of the community endeavours that they fulfilled on behalf of the state there.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. I mean, the GAA, I mean, it is so embedded throughout the entire country. I mean, it's an amazing organisation. I have huge admiration for it. There's no doubt about it. And at club level, I mean, I know you're a cooler man and you've enjoyed great success there in recent times, in particular in the hurling. But at club level, how hard is it to keep the club going financially as well as everything else? I mean, it must be a real struggle with absolutely nobody going through the doors and no form of revenue.
Well, look, I think a GAA club is experiencing the same plight as every business in the country is at the moment, in terms that your membership is down, perhaps. Members are not working, perhaps. Members who are self-employed, members who were employed, maybe on PUP, And, you know, that's going to hurt in terms of a club. Bar revenues are closed. Sponsorship may be down also. But look, I think the fact that we are a volunteer association within, you know, that makes us unique. And certainly the focus of the club will be to get back out there and, you know, to start playing games as soon as we possibly can.
Yeah, I know. There's no doubt about it. That's what everybody wants. I suppose then at county level, I know, obviously being a vice chair, a huge Dub fan, it's been amazing in the last number of years, the success that the county have enjoyed and the victories that they've been going through and the squads that of players and incredible players that have been brought through, hasn't it? I mean,
well, it is. And this is something that hasn't happened overnight. And this is the product of the investment by Dublin GAA over the past 25 years.
Yeah.
This is the benefit of us investing in games promotions officers throughout the clubs. And a lot has been said in relation to the roles of the GPO and funding of games promotions officers. But what's forgotten by other counties, perhaps, is the fact that this is a 50-50 commitment between the club and national sponsorship, government money through the GA to the county board.
And, you know, what do you make then when people sort of come out with all of the things about the Dubs have everything and it should be split up and it shouldn't be all one-way traffic?
Well, the Dubs don't have everything. And anything that the Dubs do have and anything that any club has is based on hard work and honest endeavour. Yeah. Clubs have invested hugely in their own clubs in terms of bringing on the skill set of their coaches. We're in this position whereby all of our clubs, they're doing extremely well, And our children are being very well coached from a very, very young age. And as a result, we have a very, very strong number of players who are making the transition from juvenile into minor and into adult.
Yeah.
Like, the quality of Dublin adult games at hurling and football is very, very strong. And the quality of all our championship games is very, very strong, whether it be senior, intermediate or junior.
And that
very much goes for juvenile and minor participation rates as well.
Yeah, and I suppose what people tend to forget a little bit as well is that, you know, because I can remember obviously the 90s and the noughties and, you know, when the change started to come in a little bit, and certainly it was a bit of a struggle in Dublin in particular to try and encourage younger people to turn towards GAA and maybe not towards rugby, for example, which was going through an extraordinary level of success at the time with Leinster, and football as well. You know, they were their biggest competition. It was hard to convert people back to GAA.
Well, a huge, huge effort was required for that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I grew up in Walkinstown. My club, original club, was on Cashlan. I went to Drimna Castle.
Yeah.
And, you know, that club during the 80s struggled. It merged now and it created the new club, St. James's Gales, and they're thriving again at all levels. But certainly in the 80s, Dublin GAA was somewhat... It wasn't the sport of choice for an awful lot of young players and young children. But I believe that we've actually turned that now completely, and that Dublin GAA, in terms of our participation rates, in terms of what the clubs are doing, in terms of the... what we're delivering on behalf of the children who are out there, we are second to none in terms of the sporting as being the sport of choice within the capital.
Absolutely, I couldn't agree more. Well, Ken, it's amazing the work that's been done. I really want to appreciate, say thank you to you for coming on this morning and giving us all the latest on what's happening. And I hope that, you know, the return to play is approved and it, just for training even, if kids can get back out there and get involved in their local GAA clubs again in an all sport.
Yeah, well, I agree, and I hope that that is the case. And I'll just leave you on one thing. I believe that the real strength of the GAA, it's not in things, it's in people. Mm. Our people are the hallmark, and they are the people that make the GAA what it is today. Couldn't agree. And will be tomorrow.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more. Okay, Ken, thank you so much for joining us. Talk to you again. Take care. That's Ken O'Sullivan there, who is the Vice Chair of the Dublin County Board and a cooler man as well, giving us his thoughts on the return to play and everything that's going on, basically, across all levels within the GAA. It's football time now, and delighted to be joined by the one and only Alan Cawley. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning, Reggie. I'm good, thanks. Yourself?
I'm very good, thanks. Really good form. Looking forward to another cracking weekend of sport and a big rugby weekend, of course, as well. So that's keeping me happy and excited. But there was good stuff last night as well, of course, in the President's Cup, and you were there?
I was at the match, Reggie. Yeah, it was great just to get back out to a game after obviously the tough few months that everybody has had. So just to even go along to a game felt great, and very grateful to be able to go along to it. But it was a good game, Reggie, and obviously it's the curtain raiser for the league kicking off next Friday, and it's effectively a glorified friendly, but it was anything but a friendly, Reggie. There was real intensity to the game, very, very competitive, very fiery. Plenty of action, kind of, I think it was 7 or 8 yellow cards and a red card as well. So a lot of need between the teams, which is good because this is a rivalry that's built up now over the last 2 or 3 years, and it's going to continue into this year as well. And obviously Shamrock Rovers won the league last year, and they won it by a long way, even though it was only an 18 game season. But I don't think they'll have it all their own way this year, and Dundalk certainly showed them that last night.
Yeah, and it was you know, I suppose somewhat surprising results. Some people would have felt that maybe Rovers would have had it a little bit easier than they did, and went to penalties, as you said. But Rovers came out on top from the penalties.
Dundalk came out on top in the penalties, Reggie. Dundalk won the penalty shootout, Jazz. So it was a good game, as I say. Dundalk took the lead from a set piece. They're very, very physically strong this year, and one of their new signings, Sonny Nadestad. Yeah. Scored the goal, and he must be 6'5". He should have been playing rugby last night, Reggie, instead of the football match. He's a big lad, so he scored it on his debut as well, but then he got sent off later on in the match. But they equalised Shamrock Rovers just after half time. Liam Scales got a brilliant goal. Actually, check it out if you haven't seen it. A brilliant, brilliant goal. And to be fair to Shamrock Rovers, they were probably the better team overall, but I felt Dundalk were very competitive in the game, and definitely what I took away from it last night is that, as I said, Shamrock Rovers won't have all their own way this year. I'd still have them as slight favourites for the league, but the loss of Jack Byrne and McInniff, I definitely think they're going to feel that as the season goes on. And I think it's just basically last year, the way the season went, and by the time it was over, and especially as the cup final and all that kind of stuff finished up, I definitely felt the gap was widening with Shamrock Rovers and the rest of the teams. Hmm. But the fact that they've lost Jack Byrne and Aaron McInniff, I just think it's brought them back to the pack. And it gives a lot of hope. As you said, Dundalk will be very competitive. I think Bowes will also be. And it gives hope to the likes of maybe St. Pat's, Sligo Rovers, those kind of teams as well that are looking to bridge the gap also. So when it kicks off next Friday, I think we'll have a very competitive league this year.
Absolutely. Well, as you said, it does start next Friday, and I see Rovers are taking on St. Pat's. And that after the defeat last night then is going to be a tricky one for them, because Pat's, you know, are, you know, one of their big rivals, and it's they've been going okay last season. So it's going to be a tough one for them to start.
It's a big game and tough one to start, as you say, Reggie. And even Dundalk have a tough start as well. They're going down to Sligo on the Saturday evening. So there's good games to kick it off. But that's the live game next Friday night, is the Shamrock Rovers against Pat. Shamrock Rovers were still very good now on the night, but I just think they might lack a little bit in that attacking third that obviously Jack Byrne brings and open up defences. He was obviously the best player in the league the last couple of years. Mm-hmm. But also on Aaron McInniff as well, I think they're really going to feel the loss of him, Reggie. He's a fantastic player. He's obviously gone on to Hearts, and I think he could even go on to bigger and better things. He's a very, very good player, Aaron. So losing those two, like we see with any teams, like you look at Liverpool losing their 2 or 3 best players, every team in the world, if you lose your 2 or 3 best players, you're going to feel the effects of it. And I just think Shamrock Rovers have gone from a really, really great team to probably just a great team now at the moment. They've brought in Mandrio, who looked sharp last night. Chris McCann played very well. So they have brought in reinforcements. And as I say, I still have them as favourites for the league, but only just. I think Dundalk, with a couple of the new signings they have brought in, they still have a very strong squad. Physically, as I say, they're very, very strong. And I think the gap will be a lot closer this year than what it was last year.
Absolutely. Well, I did enjoy a lot of those games last year. Actually, do you remember last year they had that League of Ireland TV subscription? Is that back in place again this year?
It is, Reggie. Yeah, the Watch LOI is back, okay. Which is great for the fans. I think it's on sale at the moment. It's €59 for, I think it's the guts of 60 games.
Yeah.
So it was streamed, obviously, last night's game was streamed, and you'll be able to stream all the other games up until the midway part of the season. I think they've contract in place just until we see what's happening in terms of crowds. And like everybody else, we're hoping by the mid part or middle of the summer that we'll hopefully have crowds back in the stadium. But you can watch all the games on the Watch LOI anyway.
Excellent stuff. Okay, good to hear that that's back. All right, last week was, we got it completely wrong. City, we can't be beaten, was our argument on that one. And then Ken was chuffed here this morning on the radio with me that they got the 2-0 win. And I have to say, the shock result of the weekend.
Yeah, and fully deserved as well, Reggie. For the first time in a long time, I'm happy to say I was wrong, because United did play very, very well. And obviously, I've been very, very critical of Solskjaer, and I still don't think he's the man to get United back to maybe winning leagues and winning Champions Leagues. But last week, they were absolutely brilliant. It was probably the best performance I've seen United in a long, long time, and the best since he's taken over as manager, considering they were going to, obviously, Man City, who were high in confidence, and they were on a run of 21 games. They completely nullified them all over the pitch. It was a really, really brilliant performance from United. But the problem for United then is obviously the inconsistency, Reggie, and we saw that then with the game against AC Milan during the week. And I know it's not the AC Milan of old, and you'd expect United to maybe take care of them, but they were just so poor in the performance again, and that's been the problem for them. It's just that lack of consistency. When you, it's okay going out in a game against their nearest rivals and putting in a big performance, but to be winning leagues and to be obviously trying to win in Europe as well, you have to be doing it week in, week out, and I think that's where they let themselves down.
Yeah, absolutely, no question about it. And you know, they're probably, although it's hard to know, I mean, the top four is so hard to predict at the moment, but they're probably okay. But I mean, there is only 4 points between that and sort of fourth place, and then six between that and fifth. So I suppose you can't really rest on your laurels too much.
No, definitely. And they should have enough, as you say, Reggie, and the cushion should be okay. But there's still 10 games to go. And as you say, Chelsea, you look at the form that they're in since Tuchel has come in. All the momentum is with them. You could nearly make a case for them actually overtaking Leicester and United if they keep up their current run of form. Leicester got a big win last week that was badly needed as well. And obviously Man United got the win against Man City. So that might stop the rot for them. And you would like to think that those, I think that might be the four come the end of it. I don't think West Ham will get into the top four, even though they're having a brilliant season. I don't think Everton will either. Spurs have hit a good rich vein of form the last 3 or 4 weeks, that come at a good time for Mourinho as well. So they will have a little bit of a squeak, obviously, if they keep Bale fit and he's back firing at the moment. Of course, Harry Kane, as we know, banging in goals always. So they'll have a squeak. But I still think, looking at the top four the way it is at the moment, I think that could be the way it finishes to come the end of the season.
Yeah, well, there's a couple of really mouth-watering clashes. The London Derby, of course, first with the Arsenal-Spurs match tomorrow at 4:30 in the Emirates. Last week was such a disaster. I don't know what to say about Arsenal. I mean, we're even scoring goals for the other teams now. But I still feel that we're going to get a victory against Spurs, but maybe it's wishful thinking.
Yeah, I think it is wishful thinking. I hope for, as your friend, I hope you do, Reggie, yeah. They're just like, they're very inconsistent. You look at their last 5 games, they've lost 2, they've won 2, and they've drawn 1. And as you say, the goals that they're giving away, the one last week was crazy.
I mean,
with Xhaka.
In the schoolboy yard, you'd be pulling your hair out.
Of course you would. And that's the one thing you're told as a kid. You never play square passes across your goals. Yeah. That's from 40 yards out, never mind on the edge of your box. And it's just madness. And the one thing that would worry me, Reggie, about that is obviously it's bad enough giving away the goal. But they went out midweek then and they gave away a similar goal against the Olympiacos, the exact same thing. So it's okay to make a mistake if you learn from it. But if you're not learning from the mistakes, I don't think you're going down the right road at all. And for them to give away the 2 goals like they did, now obviously they went on to beat Olympiacos, which was a good win. But they're just gifting up soft goals like that. They're sitting in 10th. Is that good enough for Arsenal? I don't think so. The jury is still out for me on Arteta. And as you say, Spurs are in a good run of form at the moment. 3 wins on the trot in the league.
to have Bale firing again, and obviously Harry Kane, the superstar that he is, and Son. So I don't give Arsenal a chance in this one. I'm sorry, Reggie.
Okay, no problem. I don't. It's not your fault. Definitely not your fault. No, the other juicy one that I really, really am looking forward to again tomorrow, 7:15, Old Trafford, Man United, West Ham. You know, like I said, West Ham pushing for that fourth spot, just 2 points behind Chelsea. Should be a cracker.
Absolutely, yeah. Moyes going back to Old Trafford, and even though I don't think he needs to, he has anything to prove. He's been a brilliant manager over the years. We know things didn't work out for Man United, but he's had a brilliant career as a manager, and he's proven that with West Ham. Now, just inwardly, I'm sure he'd love to go to Old Trafford and win, Reggie. He won't come out and say that publicly, but I'm sure inwardly he has a lot of motivation to try and go to Old Trafford and get that victory. Not only for himself, but look where the position his team are in at the moment as well. They have a game in hand on all the teams above them, and if they were to win, that bumps them into the top four, and who knows then with the season that they're having. I still don't think, I've been writing them off just in terms of the top four, but I still think if they get the top six, which they have a brilliant chance to do, it's a hell of a return for David Moyes, and it's almost kind of brought him back to life again in terms of his managerial career, and I'm delighted for it as well, because the reports I've always heard of David Moyes is that he's a really good fella and a really good person, so they're having a brilliant season.
Okay, yeah, we'll see how that one goes. I wouldn't mind it either, I have to say, because I might have something to say to the other lad when he's back on the radio next week. Okay, Wolves and Liverpool. I mean, Liverpool, the greatest mystery of this year. What's going wrong there? But this is going to be another tough one for Liverpool. I don't care what anybody says, going away to Wolves.
Definitely, yeah. And as you say, the greatest mystery of the year. It's crazy to think where they are and to lose six games on the trot at home. What odds would you have gotten on that at the start of the season, Reggie, when you think of how good they were last year and obviously winning the league? Of course, the injuries has impacted them. But I still don't think those two or three injuries, the ones to Van Dijk and Gomez and obviously Henderson now, should impact them in the way that they're losing six games at home on the trot. So there's something seriously wrong there. But I still wouldn't be writing Liverpool off in terms of, I think this season is a write-off, absolutely, for the league. But they still have a little bit of a squeak in the Champions League. They played quite well, obviously, during the week against Leipzig and got the job done. Whether they'll win it, I don't know. But they certainly have a chance and have a squeak. But if they get all their players back, which they will come to start the next season, I still maintain a fully fit Liverpool with all the players and Van Dijk and Gomez and the whole lot. I still think they would push Man City. So I don't think they'll become a bad team overnight. I think people should just rein in the criticism of Klopp. Obviously, it's not good at the moment, but I've heard people suggesting they should be getting rid of Klopp and all sorts of nonsense. Mm-hmm. And that's all that is complete and utter nonsense, Reggie. When they get their players back, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Salah. To me, there's something going on there in terms of maybe is he inching for a move away. I wouldn't be too disappointed if Liverpool sold him, if that's what he wants, and maybe bring in three or four new players. I think Klopp might need to freshen it up. But once they get all their players back fit, I still what he wants, and maybe bring in three or four new players. I think Klopp might need to freshen it up. But once they get all their players back fit, I still think there'll be a match for any team.
And what about Champions League stuff then, you know, for Liverpool? I mean, okay, you got that 2-0 against Leipzig again. So it's been convincing for them. What's a good Champions League story for them, with given their injuries? I know the perfect story would be to win it, but I mean, you know, given their injuries, what's a good story for them?
Yeah, I can't see them winning it, Reggie. Yeah. I think where they are at the moment, that was a good performance against Leipzig. I was disappointed with Leipzig. When you think Leipzig are the only ones in Germany really pushing Bayern Munich at the moment, I thought Leipzig would put up a far better showing, especially against the Liverpool that are not in form at all. But Liverpool beat them comfortably over the two legs. So, a good story. I think any game after this now that they might get through is a bonus, Reggie. They're in the quarter-final stage. It'll be interesting to see who they get in terms of the draw. But like you look at who went through the previous week with Borussia Dortmund and Porto. If Liverpool were to get one of them, I think they'd fancy their chances against them, and all of a sudden you might find yourself in a semi-final. So, And who knows, you might have two or three more players back at that stage as well. Obviously, maybe not the long-term ones, Van Dijk or Gomez, but I'd say Henderson might be back by that stage. And who knows, as I say, but I can't see them winning it. I think winning the Champions League will be between Bayern Munich, PSG and Man City. But if Liverpool were to get to a semi-final, I think they'd probably take that now, Reggie, when you consider the form that they've been in recent weeks.
Absolutely, I think they would. Dead right they would, considering the form they've been in. It's interesting that you mentioned Borussia Dortmund there. I see City are sort of leading the hunt for Erling Haaland. Strange character, Haaland, but he can certainly finish and he's some goal scorer.
He's an absolute monster, Reggie. I watched the match last week, Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund. He scored after 30 seconds. Yeah. Then he got another one, I think, 8 minutes later. And if you look at his numbers and his figures, and I suppose that's the way a lot of people judge the modern player now, with stats and numbers, and especially when you see what Messi and Ronaldo have been doing over the last number of years, hitting crazy numbers. So it's become a thing now where people judge you by numbers. And if Haaland keeps going the way he's going, I think he's going to smash even their records, which is obscene, really, when you think about it. Now, whether he's going to maintain that, I don't know. But certainly, the things he's doing at the moment at such a tender age is just phenomenal. And I suppose the race is on now to see who will get him. Will it be City? Will it be United? Solskjaer seems to think he might get him because he has a relationship with him from, obviously, his Norwegian days. And I think he would have he'd known his dad really well because he would have played with him. But City, of course, have a bottomless pit. But when you look at what this fella's doing, 100 million looks like a bargain for this fella, Reggie. Like, it really does. So it'd be interesting to see come the summer who he does go to or where he goes. But if he keeps up the form that he's in, he's an absolute world beater.
He's a strange character as well, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
He's his own man, there's no doubt about it. Interviews
he is his own man, yeah.
Afterwards are hilarious. I don't know what's going
to
come out.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he certainly seems to be a bit of a character, right? But that could be a good thing as well. And he seems like a fairly level-headed lad, considering the hype that's around him. Like, you know, it doesn't seem to faze him or affect him. And as I say, he's like a 19-year-old playing in an under-12s match at times when you look at him. He's a monster, like, he really is.
But he looks like a fella as well who's just is having the crack and enjoying himself.
Absolutely, and I suppose maybe that's the key to his success as well, Reggie. He's not putting too much pressure on himself. And, you know, young lads can certainly do that, and especially if they start believing their own hype. But he looks like a lad who's absolutely embracing everything about it. And long may it continue, because he's been a breath of fresh air so far in terms of his career. And as I said, the goals and the numbers, like, if you just do some stats on him, if he keeps up where he's going at the moment, as I say, he's going to smash Messi's and Ronaldo's records, and their records are absolutely obscene.
Yeah, absolutely. Who's kind of standing out for you? Who do you fancy for the Champions League?
I watched a good bit of Bayern there when we did the Club World Cup, and as I say, last week, they went 2-0 down against Borussia Dortmund after 20 minutes, and even that didn't faze them, Reggie, and they came back and won 4-2. They're a serious outfit. Lewandowski obviously is banging in goals for them this year, a brilliant player, but there's so much talent all over the pitch as well. Kimmich in midfield, brilliant. Sané went for Man City, and Gnabry and Coleman, and they're very good at the back as well, a brilliant goalkeeper. I still think they'll take a bit of stopping, but if Man City keep up the form that they've been in recent weeks, I think they'll give them a game. PSG as well, obviously, with Mbappe, so I think it sets it up nicely for it. But if you were to pin me down to one at the moment, I'd say Bayern Munich.
Yeah, that's a fair call, I think. Okay, it was great to see you back with the podcast.
Yeah, Reggie, it's back on Monday. So thanks to the God, we're back. They're obviously coinciding with the league kicking off. So Monday's show, I think we've Jim McGilton coming on. Obviously, he had a great career himself, Jim, but he's gone in as director of football with Dundalk. So it'll be interesting to hear his views and how he sees the league at the moment and the Dundalk situation. And we've a special one during the weekend with Paul Cook, who managed Sligo Rovers, a great character, and actually he was very, very funny, Reggie. It's worth checking out. He was brilliant. So we've a bonus one with Paul by the end of the week as well. So it's all good.
Oh, that's great to hear. I know you're keeping a close eye on the snooker as well over beyond. So you'd be glad to see one of your heroes is coming back. Ken was telling me there earlier on, Stephen Hendry, although Ken beat him in their practice match and won 20 quid off him. So as I said, he needs to keep practicing if Ken is beating him.
I say it was a tough job getting the 20 quid off Hendry.
That's the first thing he said was, unfortunately, he's still waiting to get his hands on it. But yeah, great to see Hendry back, though.
I watched the match last week, and he was actually good, Reggie, as well. I know he lost the match, but Matt Self played very well. But in the second frame, he hit a century, and it was almost rolling back the years. And I think he looks very determined and committed. He's not just back to make up the numbers. Whether he'll win tournaments, I don't know, but he'll certainly be competitive. And it's great to see him back. Hendry, a genius.
Yeah, no question about it. Yeah, Stephen Hendry, one we've always enjoyed watching all the time. Okay, so rumours that we might be getting back out for a little bit of outdoor exercise in April, so please God that'll be the case. You'll be out.
Hopefully, Reggie, yeah, and I heard John to the lad earlier from the golf club, and it'd be great. Like, it's been tough, so tough for everyone, it really has, and hopefully there's light at the end of the tunnel. It's been a tough out struggle. Who would have thought we'd be, like, well, I think we're a year into it now.
It's
phenomenal. It really is. So for the sake of everybody, Reggie, hopefully we can get back to some sort of normality in the near future. Absolutely.
Absolutely, please, God. Okay, Alan, great chatting to you. Good luck with the podcast this week. We'll chat to you again next week.
Thanks a million, Reggie.
Indeed, Alan Cawley there. And Alan has got Cawley's Call is the name of his podcast for those of you who are interested in checking that one out. He always has some very interesting guests on. Great podcast, doing very, very well. Well worth checking out if you want something different to listen to. Okay, well, that's all we've got time for on this week's show. It's gone so quickly again. Thank you to your listeners for listening to us on Dublin Talking Sport here on Sunshine 106.8 with thanks to InsureMyVan.ie. Thanks to our producer, Blaine R. O'Hara, and all of our guests who joined us on today's show. We'll be back again next week. Take care, stay safe, and have a great week.